is?
Yeah, bottom to the right of shared screen.
Got it. All right. Well, listen, I want to thank everybody for coming today. It's just a couple of minutes after 12, and we want to kind of start the ball rolling, if you will. Promise me this actually came from a real life conversation that I had with my dad, and it really has been meaningful to me, and I have been truly grateful that he did me a favor of stopping me on the lawn at one point and said, you know, if anything ever happens to me, this is really important. So it's been many years since that's occurred. It's hard for me to believe it's been so many years, but I'm truly grateful that he left those words for me. It's really guided the future, and it's been helpful. So today, I'm excited that we have so many people that had signed up for our event. Two of my favorite people. It's two ladies with three names. That's right, Kathy Raymond Sheffield and Karen Telshaw Johnson. Kathy and I have known each other. Oh, hey, let me admit, we've got some in the waiting room here. Difficult for me to do two things at one time, let alone three. So Kathy Sheffield and I got to meet each other socially. Apparently when we were both children, we went to a Christian singles group, and she's brilliant. And so she married the club president, and I apparently didn't catch on to the theme that quick. Kathy has over 20 years of experience in fundraising, is highly accredited, is nationally known, and so we're thrilled that she's here with us today. Karen Telshaw Johnson has her own firm. She's celebrating her 7th anniversary. We're so proud and excited for her. She is also a board member, so, you know, I have to make up excuses to get with Kathy, but, you know, Karen and I just get to associate because we got all kinds of reason with Karen Prepare. And she has been a great help to our family in actually, you know, ironing out some of those medical wishes, as well as last will and testament for my mom. And so we're just grateful that she could be with us here today. And the two of them are going to help with our discussion about advanced care planning and planned giving. And so I want to welcome Kathy and Karen. And right now I'll turn it over to you, Kathy.
Thank you, Leah. Would you mind advancing the slides to slide 3?
I would not. I'm pushing buttons, but it's not going. So,
okay.
And here are all our pictures, so you can now identify us should we be in
addition to seeing us on your screen, you can see pictures of us.
Oh, and real quick, Leah is the executive director of Care and Prepare, and we are very fortunate to have her as a part of our group.
Well, thank you.
It's an honor. It's definitely an honor to be here and to be able to work with Care and Prepare, and of course, Leah and Karen. So welcome to our presentation today. On your screen right now is the obligatory legal notice that those of us who work with individuals to discuss and assist in the preparation of their final estate plans must show at the beginning of every presentation. So next, Leah, thank you so much. Today, we are wanting to visit with you about what your legacy will be. We think that legacy is about life and living, and it's definitely about reflecting on your past, reflecting on your present, and then, of course, looking well into the future and dreaming about what you will be remembered for. And one of the things that I like to correlate with legacy is for you to think about when it's the best time to plant a young tree. And one of the things that we hear from ecologists, I always mispronounce that word, ecologists, is that the best time to plant a young tree is definitely the best place, I should say, is in a clearing in an old growth forest or in an open field. That's the question that they ask us. And that we've been told that planting the young tree is best when it's planted amongst older trees. And the reason is because the roots graft with the other trees, and they follow the pathways that those older trees have created, and that really builds that tree, that young tree, a strong foundation. And so we like to liken legacy with forests and trees and the grafting of the roots from those who came before us with those that are with us currently. And that legacy is an interconnection across time with a need that for with those who have come before us and with those who are going to be coming after us. I think that legacy is something that's very fundamental to being a human. And research shows that without a sense of working to create a legacy, that we as adults lose meaning in our life. And exploring the idea of what your legacy will be offers you that glimpse of what your human relationships are in building strong community. And the idea of legacy may remind us of death, but it's not about death. It's being mindful of death. And that's actually a really good thing because death informs life. So Leah, thank you for going to that slide. I will let you know that one of the things that got me thinking about my legacy was the day I got married. And Leah mentioned reference to my husband earlier. His name is Scott. And Scott and I have been married for about 18 years. And that's the day that I began thinking about my legacy was when Scott and I married. The reason in part was because he was the single father of two children at that time. They were 11 and 13 at that time. And I was able to be a full-time stepmom to them. And that was when I started thinking about my legacy, the day I became a parent. And I think that for most of us, the day we become parent is when we start thinking about that. Since that day, you will see on this slide, there's some pictures of my grandchildren. Well, that really only reinforces what your legacy will be because you start thinking about how you are impacting their lives. So that makes me very happy to be able to share with you what started me thinking about my legacy. And I hope that you will start reflecting on what is making you think about your legacy. So Karen and I are going to share five questions with you that assist us in contemplating and visiting with others on how we want to make a difference. And that our hope is that these questions will give you something to think about with regards to your legacy. So our first question is, who or what do you wish to impact? And we feel that this question really describes those that are in your circle of influence, those people that you affiliate with, of course, your family, your friends. And these are the folks that are definitely within your reach. And we really feel that you need to start thinking about those that you would like to impact when you're no longer here. Question two.
So the second question is, how do you want to instill change? So what will you do to instill changes and make a difference? So for example, you may want to impact your children or your grandchildren by sending them to college. So that's one way to consider. And you may want to start a business, church, or organization that will affect hundreds or even thousands of people. You may want to plant trees, as was mentioned earlier. You may want to save pets or clean up the environment. And so list the change that you want to see. That's the second question and the second step.
The third question is, what will you do to create or what will you do that will outlive your life? Maybe you want to start a savings account for your grandchildren's college fund. A lot of people do that. Or maybe you want to write a book. Or as Karen mentioned, maybe you want to start a business. The answer to this question should be something that continues on even after you pass on. Financially, you might want to include items like life insurance or annuities. Or for material items, you might want to consider writing a book or creating a video, or perhaps you're musically inclined and would like to write a song. Physical items may include things like maybe you want to build a house, create that business, establish that school, plant that tree. So
what will be the results? You know, you have to expand your mindset to dream big. So this is where you get to extrapolate the results of your plans and actions. And so if your goal is to create an endowed scholarship, 50 years is a long time, and the multiplier effect of compound interest can lead to some spectacular results. Say that you invested in Facebook 10 years ago, right? So that's something to consider and to hold on to. And the fifth and final question is, what action steps are necessary to make this a reality? So identify some specific milestones and create a realistic time frame to complete the task to make that goal a reality. So to be honest, this is where people get stuck. So, and they say, I'll get to it someday. But the present is really a gift, right? And so the time to do that is now. So if your dream is to cure a disease, but you don't have to be a scientist, right? One of the ways this can be accomplished is to fund research or build a research center. And so you don't necessarily have to be a scientist to reach that goal.
One of my favorite stories comes from Benjamin Franklin. And you'll see that I have a quote here on this screen that is one of my favorite Benjamin Franklin quotes. But what I really love about Benjamin Franklin was he intentionally left a legacy, and we still talk about him today. And you may not be familiar with this story, but did you know that when Benjamin Franklin died in 1790, he left two cities, Boston and Philadelphia, 1,000 sterling pounds each, which in today's money is about $100,000 to $125,000. And the requirement that he had was that the money be held in trust for 100 years after his death, after which the cities could use the money in part to establish trade schools or loans for apprentices, which essentially is scholarships for education, which is something we're very familiar today. Not all of the money could be withdrawn during that first century, and the rest had to remain another 100 years. So here is Benjamin Franklin thinking 200 years into the future when he is creating this plan. And when the money came available 200 years after his death, the Philadelphia Fund was worth $2 million and the Boston Fund was worth $5 million. And the reason why the Boston Fund was worth a little more was because they used less in that second 100-year period. Essentially, I'm telling you about an endowment. And he has been able to create some significant institutions in those two cities because of that money. One of the things that I love about my job is that I get to work with some of the best, most generous people in the communities in which I work. And as Leah shared with you, I've worked in gift planning or charitable planning for about 20 years. And one of the things that I love is watching folks dream a dream and then come up with how they want to execute that dream when they're no longer here. And I just feel that this example of Benjamin Franklin's endowments, which they were not called that at that time, is a perfect illustration of one of the ways that you can create a legacy that will allow you to still be talked about today. So let's explore three simple ways that one can affect positive change and pass on their values to future generations and plant their legacy. So one of the things that you see on this screen are, you see two different columns, and we want to share with you what an estate is. And so between the two columns, you'll see probate assets and non-probate assets. And one of the things that I've learned is that folks confuse these and they don't understand what the difference is between a probate asset and a non-probate asset. Probate is the process of proving a document at your death through a court, typically. And that is when you file your will with the courthouse, when your executor does that. So the assets that fall under the probate process are your home, businesses, any of your personal items that you have within your possession, a farm, other real estate, things like that. Non-probate assets are those assets that are typically done by contract. And you'll see a list here, retirement plans, 401ks, 403bs, any of those savings accounts that you have, any investment accounts you have, and definitely life insurance. So those assets pass on at your death to your heirs or desired beneficiary by contract. And they are not governed by that will document or the probate document.
So in the probate part of my practice, some of the most challenging times are when somebody passes away and they pass away without a will, especially when we have blended families. And we have more and more of those. So approximately 50% of Americans do not have wills at the time of their death, which thank you for the additional work that that requires in the court system. But that's really not the best way to protect your legacy. And that's what we're talking about today. So how do we protect our legacy? So there's easy ways. So one, create a will. And I am not a big fan of online wills. They leave out a lot of errors and cause a lot of errors, and they have that leads us to do a lot more work in the probate court than we would have to do otherwise. So I highly encourage seeking a professional to protect your legacy versus a $75 form online or at a stationery store. And so it's your life that's worth a little bit more than that. So then your beneficiary designation form, where those non-probate assets, you know, for your accounts, all accounts will have a beneficiary designation. Sometimes they're a little bit more difficult to find, so you specifically need to ask the question of the financial institution, what happens when I die? And they will find the form that then lists your beneficiary designation. And then Kathy is specifically going to go into QCDs, otherwise known as qualified charitable distributions. So let's talk about a will. All right, so your will is an important document because it reflects your legacy. It is the last, I take wills very seriously, and I take my job to probate them very seriously because it is the last filed document that reflects your life. This is it, which is why it, in all seriousness, needs to be handled with that type of serious reflection in seeking a professional. But in the United States, we live in an asset distribution system. And what that means is every single asset passes according to its own laws. So if we have a 401k with the proper beneficiary designation, then that asset will pass according to that beneficiary designation. If that beneficiary that's listed has predeceased and we end up with no beneficiary listed, that's when that asset will end up in probate court because the financial institution that runs it wants a court order to state who's the beneficiary. And so they will then cut a check to the estate. And the only way to open up an estate checking account, which is what has to be done, is with letters testamentary. Letters are given to your executor. And so, and the executor gets those once the will has been filed with the court and there's an order admitting it into the court. So there's a will has no legal effect until the court has jurisdiction. So you literally, we have to go and we have to give testimony to the court to say that the decedent, the person who just recently died, lived here, died here, had some sort of real estate here, the court has to claim jurisdiction. And so once the court claims jurisdiction, there's an order admitting it into probate. So prior to that, it has no legal effect. And so the order admitting it into probate then allows us to appoint the independent executor named in the will. And then the executor gathers assets, sends notice to creditors, because unfortunately, death doesn't take care of your bills. Your bills have to be taken care of by your estate. So we have to pay the estate debts prior to then making distributions to beneficiaries. And so that's only after the payment of claims. So there are, so I'm sorry, I just had to check on something real quick. So one of the things we have to look at is people ask us, well, how often do we need to change our will? You know, so what do we have to do? Well, we have to look as to whether or not we have any estate tax to take into consideration. So have there been net worth changes, right? And so in the United States right now, the federal estate tax sits at $11.2 million. That will change in January of 2026. Right now, if the laws don't change, it'll change and go back down to, we think, about $6.5 million at that time. And so that have you won, come into the lottery, has a relative left you, you know, an inheritance that you did not anticipate. So we have to look at those and consider how often we change our wills in addition to family dynamic changes. You know, when our kids are little, we have these pie in the sky ideas as to what their lives are going to look like. And then as they get older, things change. So, you know, my youngest child, great with funds. My oldest child, you give her $10, she'll spend $20. So, you know, so that means that I may need things in my will in my estate to help protect her longer. And so also the people in our lives change. And so who we name as executor I had a client once name his brother on everything within, because he was the family accountant, so he did everybody's business. And then 6 months later, he was in Leavenworth for tax evasion. So guess what? We needed to change all of those documents. And our goals and objectives change over time. You know, what we may want in our 20s and 30s is not what we want necessarily in our 60s and 70s. And so we need to review that as well. And so there are tax laws changes. There is no inheritance tax in the state of Texas, but there are changes with 401ks. There are changes with IRAs. And it's important to understand how those will distribute and the and what goes into doing things to protect ourselves from unnecessary tax burdens. And so we try to avoid litigation by having these things in place and in writing. And we certainly need to address things when there are divorces and when there's financial insecurity of heirs. And so that we need to talk about all of those things, that you have an estate plan that makes sense for your family. So how do we plan effectively, Kathy?
Well, I thank you. I'd love to jump back up to slide 16 for a second, and then we'll jump back down to 19. Okay. And I want to share with you some of the, what Karen actually set it up perfectly, because one of the things I want to visit with you about is the qualified charitable distribution, which used to be called the charitable IRA rollover. And over the last couple years, since it has been made permanent, the IRS has started referring to it as the qualified charitable distribution. And as Karen mentioned, many times laws will change regarding certain assets that we have, in particular retirement account assets. And you may or may not be familiar with two acts that came into effect in 2020. The first was the SECURE Act, and the second was the CARES Act, both of which impacted retirement accounts. And I'm not going to go into great detail on those changes that were made, but I'll mention a few of them briefly. The first one was the elimination of the stretch IRA provision. And in the past, you were able to leave your retirement account to individuals, and they would be able to stretch out the payments over the course of their lifetime. There was no requirement for them to wait until they were a certain age, but they started receiving those annual, what we call minimum required minimum distribution, or RMD, immediately. But they had the rest of their life to utilize those funds. They eliminated that this year, and now individuals that are not your spouse are required to utilize those entire funds within 10 years. And so depending upon how old those individuals are, it could be their highest tax paying years, and it could significantly impact them in the form of income taxes. And of course, the last thing we want to do is pay a lot in income taxes. So on a fortunate note, it will not be paid by your estate, but those individuals benefiting will be paying significant income taxes on those, and could potentially be paying higher income tax overall due to what those distributions do to their income for that year. So that's just something that we can do a lot of planning around. Karen can assist you with that. Your financial planners can be able to assist you with those things. So we want to mention that. The other thing is that the RMD used to be 70 and a half, and now it's 72. And so they've increased the age of when you are required to start taking your RMD, your required minimum distribution from those accounts. One thing that individuals have found a lot of benefit from is that qualified charitable distribution, which is the allowance of an individual who is 70 and a half, and the IRS and the law did not impact this for the RMDs. So if you are 70 and a half, you are eligible to roll over to a qualified charity up to $100,000 each year from your IRA. And what's great about this opportunity is it can be done without you having to pay income tax on it. You do not have to realize that income, and there is no income tax due on that. What you may want to be aware of is that there is also no charitable deduction for that. So you roll that money straight from your administrator to a qualified charity, and that becomes your gift per se for that year. But you will not be receiving a receipt from that organization. You will receive acknowledgement from that organization, a thank you, but you will not receive a gift receipt. What's awesome about this is if you are married, just keep in mind that you can donate up to $200,000. And I may be speaking in huge numbers and you may think, why would I ever want to donate that much? So just know that many times folks who are not wanting to realize income are those individuals who are in their 70s and beyond. And that, because again, it's all about the income tax advantages for things like that. Well, so now we can jump.
You mean 70 and a half, right?
Yes.
This is the first time that a half birthday actually comes in, you know, handy to know.
And I think it's actually 70 and a half in one day, but who's counting? I will promise you that the IRS is. So yeah. we definitely want to make sure that, that you're doing that the proper way. So always speak with the sponsor, the fiduciary manager. So whether you, you know, I don't know who that is for you. It may be Vanguard, Fidelity, you know, whoever is managing your retirement assets, they're the ones who can best advise you. They're also going to be the ones who, when you turn 72 moving forward, they're going to send you a letter that says, congratulations, you're 72. And now you get to take an RMD every year. So that will be your trigger to know that you now qualify to make that type of gift to charity. So now I'm going to thank you, Leah, for moving us to slide 19. I would love to visit with you a little bit about what we consider planning effectively. And that's been, of course, this whole conversation, right? So, you know, we encourage anyone who has current estate plans or who is considering updating their estate plans to really sit back and take a snapshot of your current situation. Are you married? Does your plan reflect the fact that you're married? Has your spouse recently passed away? Does your plan still talk about your spouse being the beneficiary of your assets? Most married couples, when they pass away, give all of their assets to their surviving spouse. If your spouse has recently passed away, you're going to want to consider updating your estate plans. Do your current plans clearly identify your objectives? What are your financial and personal and maybe even philanthropic objectives that you wish to accomplish through your estate plans? You know, you need to think about everything that's in your world that can be impacted by your death or your spouse's death. And then you want to make sure that you're thinking about all the different techniques and ways that you can transfer assets to your loved ones when you pass away. And so there are a lot of different options out there. Karen has mentioned several of them. And then we want to make sure that you understand these tools. So when you're visiting with your attorney, whether it's Karen or whether it's somebody else in your community that you trust, you want to make sure that you fully understand what they're presenting to you as options for your estate plans. Because if you don't understand them, that's not going to be good, because we always encourage that you communicate with your family and your loved ones what your plans are. So without proper planning, one of the things that, you know, you'll hear Karen say this and you'll hear me say this, is that without proper planning, someone else is choosing either the caretakers for your children and they're choosing the distribution of your assets. And if you live in a community property state, that may swing right on over to your surviving spouse. But if you do not live in a community, or if you do live in a community property state and you are no longer wishing your spouse to receive some of those assets, or perhaps they're now an ex-spouse, those are things that you need to always take into consideration. Not only whether or not your spouse is still surviving or whether or not your spouse is still in your marriage. That was probably not the right way to say that. But also other individuals. So, you know, maybe you've had some other deaths in your family and you've bequeathed, which means gifting at death, you've bequeathed other things to individuals who are no longer in the capacity to be able to accept those gifts. So those are always things that you want to continue to reevaluate to make sure that it's proper. Additionally, think about your guardians, your executors, your trustees, and anyone else who you've given any type of power of attorney with or any type of authority over, because if they've also passed away, that's definitely a reason, or are not in a position to be in those roles anymore. Those are definitely reasons to update your plans. So we've got some questions that we feel are questions that you ask yourself when you are starting to think about your estate plans and leaving that legacy. We think that the first question that you think about when making these plans is, do I have enough to live on for the rest of my life? Does my spouse have enough to live on for the rest of their life? And if that's not the case, then you've got some advisors that you might want to visit with.
Right. So the next question is, how much should I leave my heirs and what is the best way to provide them? So there's really two issues here. Because you don't know, everybody knows that at some point they won't be here, but they don't have an exact time frame, right? And COVID-19 certainly makes our mortality a little bit more aware, makes us be a little bit more aware of our mortality and the fact that we won't be here. And so then the question is, how much should I leave? I have people say, well, I want to leave this person 5,000. I want to leave this person 10,000. I want to leave this person, you know, a quarter million. Well, you don't know how long you're going to live and what your estate's going to look like. So I encourage people to leave percentages. And so unless you're saying to my children in equal shares, if you have five nieces and nephews and three cousins or what have you, well, maybe you have different feelings for those people and you can leave somebody 5% and somebody 10%. So then after we pay the bills, whatever's in your estate pursuant to your will, we can make those percentages, you know, accordingly. And so that's one way to do it. I think percentages is the best way when trying to make those bequeaths in your will. And so, but the other thing is, because we go back to the next one, to the prior one.
Sure, I'm sorry.
Wait, there we go. So the other thing is you'll note there that in that picture we're dealing with special needs, right? And so there are some beneficiaries who might be special needs kids or special needs adults, and that if they come into an inheritance, that they potentially lose their public benefits. So to prevent that from happening, you can put something called a special needs trust or supplemental needs trust in your will or in another document and set that up so that if they do come into that money, it doesn't go to them directly, it goes into a trust and it still allows them to have their public benefits. And so that's certainly something to be mindful of whenever trying to leave somebody with special needs as a beneficiary in your estate plan.
Karen mentioned that she loves percentages, and I love percentages too, because I feel like percentages are completely appropriate when your estate continues to grow. And as you start utilizing some of your assets in your retirement years and it declines some, that percentage is always still going to represent a portion, that whatever portion of your estate you wished to give away. And so I love percentages too. So cheers on that, Karen. The third question that we think about and that I know you think about when you're preparing your estate is, what am I going to do with what's left over? I refer to this leftover as social capital. And the social capital, when you are done with what you predict you're going to need and what your spouse is going to need and what you wish to gift to your family members, that leftover social capital has two options in my mind: taxes and or charitable gifts. And so, you know, you hear the inevitable phrase that the two things in life that are guaranteed are death and taxes. Well, one of the goals that we have is lowering that tax impact and gifting more to either charities and or heirs. Because often when you gift to charity, that frees up a little bit more to give to your heirs. And it may sound contradictory, but that's something that Karen and I would be definitely happy I'm illustrating for you. I do work with individuals who are okay with paying taxes. You would be surprised at, because I personally, I would like to eliminate all of mine, but there are many Americans that are okay with, huh?
And today is that day.
Right? Exactly. Oh yeah. Happy day after election day. And so, yeah, you know, you never know. And, I'm happy to facilitate when I work with an individual, to make sure that whatever social capital they have left over is either going to the right charity or is going to, benefit the government. Happy to do so. So one of the things that I want to share with you before we leave today is this quote that I was listening to the radio one day, and if you're not familiar with the musician Macklemore, you know, that's, I don't know that you need to run out and Google him, but I will say that the words to this song really resonated with me when I heard it, and so then I did have to Google it so that I can make sure I quoted him correctly. And the lyrics were, "I heard you die twice. Once when they bury you in the grave, and the second time is the last time that someone mentioned your name." And that is a very poignant thought, and I know others have been credited with saying something very similar, but it's a very poignant thought when you start thinking in terms of what your legacy really will be. And we've mentioned Benjamin Franklin's name several times today, and that legacy that he left is still there. And so hopefully this quote will start you thinking about your own legacy.
Right. So you do get to decide the legacy that you will leave. And so with that in mind, what will you do today to leave your legacy? Anything that you put in writing is something that you get to leave behind. Your will, proper planning with somebody like Kathy. And so if you don't put it in writing, it doesn't exist. And that means you don't exist. And so we think it's important because we know it's important to you to protect your legacy by putting things in writing. So what are some next steps, Kathy?
So we've come up with a list for you. Thank you, Karen. We've come up with a list for you. And one of the things that we encourage you to do is, of course, not procrastinate at all. Start thinking today about are your plans current? Do they need to be updated? Set a date and meet with someone like Karen, meet with someone like me, and we will assist you in looking at what your objectives are, financial and philanthropic. But definitely set a date to meet with your advisors, and putting a date on the calendar actually gets you starting to plan, because once you have that date on the calendar, you are needing to prepare for those meetings. But start looking at your values and goals. What are the things that you want to do, and why do you want to accomplish those things? Once you have identified those two things, what you want to do and why you want to do it, we can help you get to how you get there. But we encourage you to do that before you begin the planning process. And then remember those things that we've already discussed. What are your needs? What are your spouse's needs? What are the needs of your heirs? And do you have any favorite charities that you've supported for many, many years during your lifetime, whether it's time, talent, or treasure, that you would like to continue to support when you're no longer here?
So this is just some levity within our discussion. We keep hearing now about a lot of people in long-term care facilities and senior centers. And so, but this is definitely true. Lawyers and beneficiaries are gathering overhead. Looks like someone's fixing to die. So, you know, we want you to prepare before that.
I want you to find humor in that. Really, you know, Karen and I are firm believers that humor is what really gets us through the most difficult times. Absolutely. And whether or not it's an actual death in your family or whether it's planning your estate, we want you to understand that it's important and that you find humor in it.
Yeah, because we plan, God laughs, right? So get ahead of the game.
Well, very good. I do appreciate you guys keeping us on a good note, a high note there. And just want to open it up and see if there are any questions from our audience. So I have one under the special needs trust. Is that difficult to set up, and what's typically involved? What are the circumstances that would necessitate that?
So if somebody is already on public benefit, so that's the first immediate need, is if we know that somebody is already on public benefits, they're receiving Medicaid for health care, they have Social Security disability income. And so these can be adults who have suffered traumatic brain injuries, or, you know, adults with any other type of disorder that requires public support. And so you don't want them to lose that public support. So you can set up a special needs trust in a couple of different ways. Number one, you can set it up in your will so that it's a testamentary trust, which means it's a trust that arises, but only after you've deceased, and then only if it's needed, right? So it's an option if it's needed. But you can also set up an SNT separately while you're alive and fund it and begin funding it while you're alive. You can also set it up in a revocable trust as a part of a larger plan and putting your estate planning through a revocable trust, which is a trust that's created while you're alive, and it has what I call above ground provisions, because while you're alive, you can title things to it. and you can create your estate plan in it. And then when you die, it has what I call them below ground provisions, because the trustee can handle your estate without necessarily having to go to court. And so those are different ways to do it. It does require a professional to get those things set up. And there's, and the state of Texas has other venues as well for setting up an SNT.
So is it typically expensive, or it's basically the cost of the advice to put the instrument together for your loved one?
So it can be expensive. It can also be cost effective, depending on what's needed, depending on the size of the assets, depending on what needs to be done. I bring in, you know, people like Kathy to talk about different asset considerations for an SNT. But what's more expensive in the long run is not doing anything and somebody losing their medical benefits, because we don't have an SNT in place to protect them. And so that can be much more the expensive process.
Okay.
And, you know, unintended consequences and messages are often delivered through a final estate, whether it was planned or unplanned.
Yeah.
And, you know, you never want to leave your family or loved ones with an unintended message, and definitely unintended consequences. And so a special needs trust is definitely something worth considering if you have anyone in your life that is definitely going to qualify for the elimination of that if they were to receive significant funds.
One of the things that happens a lot is, especially as an unintended consequence, we deal with a lot of mineral interests, mm-hmm. or we deal with a lot down in, you know, Granbury on the lake, where I have had somebody who was on public benefits all of a sudden become the beneficiary of 40 acres around Lake Granbury. And you can't disclaim it. Right? Because then that's considered, you know, an invalid transfer. And so there are real life consequences to not handling that in the proper way. So I encourage everybody, especially if you've got real estate and you have a 1/16th interest in this, or somebody's going to get a 1/32nd interest in that, to really be mindful of those transfers. Because if grandpa didn't do it right, or, you know, three generations ago didn't do it right, the title company is going to find it. Yeah. And we're going to have a transfer to somebody who necessarily should not be receiving that, because they could possibly lose their public medical care.
Okay.
Good do you know. Mind if I speak a little bit about those unintended messages, Leah?
No, please do.
And I there may be more questions, I'm not sure. But I will tell you that, you know, we touched on this a little bit. And then the elaboration of this conversation or this question, I think it's appropriate to talk a little bit about communicating with your loved ones what your plan is. And because oftentimes people prepare their plans and they don't like talking about it with their children, or most of the time it's their children and grandchildren. And they just let whatever happens be, because they've made these plans for whether or not it was equal shares or whether it was unequal shares because of differing circumstances, whatever the rationale was for the individual who prepared their plan, the message to the recipients and the beneficiaries may not be as simple as what your thought was. And so, you know, we really encourage the communication of whatever your plan is to your loved ones. And it could be that you sit down with them and you visit with them in person and say, okay, I've just finished my estate plans. This is who the executor is going to be. This is how I'm divvying up my assets. This is why I'm doing it that way. And if you are not comfortable visiting with them in person, one of the things that I personally encourage is that you write them a letter. Write them a letter that will be found with your estate planning documents that explains what you've chosen to do. And you can also in that letter elaborate what your hopes, dreams, and aspirations are for them. So if they're grandchildren, you may say, you know, I hope that you utilize these funds that I'm giving you for education. Or maybe that's to your children. I hope that you pay off the mortgage on your home. You know, you can share with them what your hopes, dreams, and aspirations are with regards to that gift. And I think that you're going to find that your heirs are very grateful for that. And personally, I always say write it in handwriting, because I think that that's going to become a family heirloom. If you write a letter like that in your handwriting,
You might need an interpreter, though, because they're not teaching that in school anymore.
Right. Well, handwriting, they still teach. It may not be cursive. So, yeah. But I'll tell you, I've recently read in the last year, well, actually, it was a little over a year ago, 2019, Mother's Day, 2019, Father's Day, in one in the New York Times and the other was in the Washington Post. There were articles written from reporters discussing a letter that they found from their father and then one that they had found from their mother, which was in along the lines of what I'm talking about, the letter to loved ones.
Well, my mother, she knows shorthand, so if she reverts to that, we're all in deep trouble. I may have to call Brenda over at Telshaw Johnson Law Firm. So,
shorthand interpretation.
Exactly. I really appreciate y'all's time. I don't know if we have any more questions online or not, but
I don't see any in the chat box.
I don't either. I am really grateful that Karen could be here this morning, and we've got her contact information listed there. So if you'd like to reach out to her, of course, I have it here at Karen Prepare, so you can get in touch. Kathy, I forgot to mention, she and I also worked together when I was at Cook Children's, and those are some of my favorite memories of learning development from her as I was working with the physicians. And so, Kathy, I know you're doing this presentation coast to coast, and as well as in Fort Worth, I hear, too. So grateful for you guys being a part of it. And, you know, one thing about COVID, we certainly are learning how to Zoom better, aren't we? And it is bringing people together that might not otherwise be able to join us. So thank you, two ladies. I really appreciate your time today. Appreciate our audience. And there were quite a few folks that registered but didn't make it. They may have forgotten that this actually was the tax deadline day, either to file your taxes or file an extension, as I usually do. So.
Karen, when you referenced tax day earlier, I was thinking of the election day and the tax consequences post that. I forgot today was July 15th.
Well, tax day. Normally, it's not our normal tax day. So.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Nothing normal about 2020, but we'll really be glad to see in hindsight. So. Right,
thank
this
you.
Was fun. Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, great.
My pleasure.